Hello and welcome to this episode of Saber Speaks. It's the podcast we put out every couple of weeks and maybe now as towards the end of the year, maybe every week, that helps our community understand some of the things that are going on here in Sartell St. Stephen's Schools. Its purpose is to help encourage people to understand all the great things that are happening, but also to be educational in nature, because sometimes there are things happening in schools that people aren't always aware of. And so that's the purpose of our podcast. My name is Tom Lee. I'm the interim superintendent and I'm your host for today's episode. And with me is Dawn Gent. She is our director of special education. Dawn, welcome.
Welcome. Thank you, I should say. I'm happy to be here.
Great. So let's begin from the beginning. What is special education? When I grew up, I didn't experience kids like who had special needs in my school. I didn't know any kids who were visually impaired or blind, hard of hearing or deaf, any kids with any physical impairments or, I think it's because back in the 60s when I grew up, most of those students attended state schools, like here in Minnesota, and I didn't grow up in Minnesota, grew up in Michigan, but Michigan has the same thing. We have a school for the deaf in Faribault. We have a school for the blind in Faribault, and we used to have a school for the physically impaired out in Owatonna. So my understanding is that the kids used to go off to state schools that have to leave their families and be in residential schools. And then outside of that, of course, you know, I think people that maybe grew up in the 60s like me, we had, and I'm going to air quote now, that class, end of air quote, at the end of the hallway that had a mixture of kids who were just, I just called them different. And I had no idea why they were different. Some of them, and as I look back on it, they might have been mildly mentally impaired. They may have had some learning difficulties. I have no idea because they weren't really in my classes too many a time. So I didn't really have a great exposure growing up to kids with any kind of special needs. But today it's very, very different. And can you help us understand kind of basic special ed 101? Where did it start? What does it entail? And let's go from there.
Well, special education started with a federal law that was passed in 1975. It's called the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act. And really that is requires us as a public school to provide free and appropriate education to students who are eligible and are found eligible through testing to have a disability. And it really ensures that we provide an education for them in their local school educational setting and integrate them with their general education peers as much as possible. In order to be eligible for special education, we usually go through an evaluation process. It's a comprehensive evaluation report that looks at intellectual functioning, academics, social, emotional, functional, many other areas to see if they're eligible for special education. They can qualify under 14 different categories, and really there is a range of students that we provide services for. They range anywhere from students who are needing some specified instruction in reading to students who need support with functional skills such as grooming, bathrooming, maybe need some one-on-one adult support throughout their day. Once we have determined those needs and what they're eligible for, we write an individual education plan or an IEP mm-hmm. for each of the students, and then that is how we determine what their specific instruction looks like from a special education teacher.
Yeah, so I went to Sweden back in 2006 as part of a principal exchange program. Swedish principals came here to Minnesota, and a bunch of Minnesota principals went there. And what was interesting is they have a national curriculum, and part of their national curriculum is special education. So I was very curious because they approach special education very differently than we do here. Because we have different categories of kids. They just have one category of kids, special education. And we categorize kids based on their specific disability. And then in each disability, there's like a range, right? So I started my career probably about 5 years after the passage of 94-142, which is that landmark case that was behind IDEA. I entered the field, and there was kids who were partially sighted, right, or met the requirements or the state statute for qualification, which was 2200 in the better eye after correction. And then there's a range all the way down to completely blind, right? And so then we would program for their needs differently, right? Because so for someone who is partially sighted, we might get them a large CCTV so that they could blow up the print of a book, right? The goal there is being access to information. Where the student who is totally blind, we would teach Braille and Nemeth code, which is a math symbol system for people who are blind. We would teach them travel training and compensatory skills, things like how can you tell the difference between chicken noodle soup and cream of broccoli soup in the cans. That's kind of what we did. And my understanding is that we still have a range in almost all of our disability categories. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Correct. I would say, let's just pick a category, a specific learning disability.
Okay.
I might have students who qualify in just reading.
Yep.
Or they qualify in just math under that category. And if they're, really it's about how discrepant are they from their grade age peers,
right.
When it comes to their reading level or their math level. So if they're closer to their grade level, they might get minimum services. So let's say they are just a student who receives reading instruction. They might have, 25 minutes a day where they have some specific targeted reading instruction based on their needs. But I might also have students who qualify in reading, math, and written language. They might be further away from their grade level peers and really need more instruction. So they might be students who have it 5 days a week for, up to 60 minutes. They might get 30 for reading, 30 for math, maybe even 30 for writing. So might be 90 minutes away from their gen ed peers. So it really just depends on the level of where they're at. But that's just one category. But in many other categories, I would say the same thing. In the area of autism, we have students who really just need check-in, maybe some minimal instruction on social skills, really understanding social situations. Or you might have students who are nonverbal autistic, and really we're working on a lot of functional skills with them and mm-hmm. working on grooming and routines and basic skills. So it really depends, but that's all determined in their evaluation report, and then we design their program based on that.
Yes, and when I was a middle school principal in Bloomington, we had two ASD programs, or Autism Spectrum Disorder programs, one for the lower functioning, where we were working on functional skills,
mm-hmm.
and a second program for the higher functioning kids. Some of those kids were absolutely brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they still needed some help with some understanding social context and social clues and cues, and those were primarily the way that we did. And they also needed some support in organization and other mm-hmm. things in some of their classrooms. If you think of the professor, right? Some professors are really organized, but lots of professors are disorganized
mm-hmm.
because they're so bright, right? And so that's kind of an example of that. In that one disability area, there were enough kids in both areas for
mm-hmm.
a special program for each to them. So that kind of leads us into a concept that that the federal government, and so we often talk in terms of federal settings and what are those federal levels. And the reason we talk about them as being federal is because these are federal laws that govern most of this, right? So
mm-hmm.
can you explain a little bit about the different settings? And the different settings are based on how much a student needs specific special ed intervention, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so can you talk a little bit about that, please?
Yes. So we call it least restrictive environment, or LRE. So the least restrictive environment really is talking about what's the most appropriate setting for students. And the federal settings really break it down into less than 20% of the day away from their gen ed peers. So if they're receiving 30 minutes of instruction, that would be a federal one setting. If they are a student who is receiving maybe 120 minutes of direct instruction in a resource room away from their general education peers or their general ed classroom, They would be considered a level two, which is 20% to about 60% of their day away from their gen ed peers.
Can I pause you just there? Because we also have push in programs.
Correct.
So a pull out program would be I take this student into my resource room out of the classroom and I provide that instruction there.
Yep.
But we also have push in programs where as a teacher, I go into the regular language arts or reading class and I support that student in that class, but they're still getting that number of minutes.
Yes.
So it really is about the minutes, not necessarily about the location for the most part. Until we get to it, in setting one and two, until we get to setting three and four, correct? Yeah.
Well, the minutes, it's really the minutes they're away from their peers. So if we're pushing in a general education classroom, that really isn't counting towards the setting. The setting is really about how much time are they removed from their peers.
Got it.
So in the least restrictive environment, that's why we need to say in there why they need that specialized instruction away from their peers, because they really want us to provide it in the most appropriate setting for them. So students who, talking about ranges of students, so if we have students who are closer to their grade level peers, they would be students who would more likely be receiving push-in in the classroom or a co-taught model. If they're students who are, their skill level is further away from their general education peers, they would probably be receiving more resource time away from their peers. But yeah, so when we get to a level three setting is really the amount of minutes they're, it's more than 60% of their day is away from their special education, away from their general education classroom. We have different level three programs. Some are for students who are just, they might have high behavioral needs. They have difficulties with self-regulation, self-awareness. And really need a lot of instruction on behavioral skills and social skills. That's one level three setting. We also have students, though, who are a level three setting because they receive functional services, speech, DAEP. They qualify for multiple service areas. And when you add all of those minutes up, it makes them a level three student. So we also have level four setting, which really means they're in a small group placement off campus. They're not in our school district. They go to a different setting. They usually have 6 to 8 kids in a setting, and that's our level four programs.
Mm-hmm.
And we also have students who can be home-based or homebound, and they would be a setting eight.
Mm-hmm. So to that end, when I was a principal in Bloomington again, I also had a student who received special services because he truly was the bubble child. He had no immune system. And so he couldn't come to school because he'd get sick. He had the potential of dying. So he had to stay home, and we had to provide services for him. And that was a really interesting thing. Eventually, we got like a little robot bottom with a little iPad on the top and allowed him to kind of walk through the hallways of school and go into class. And his face appeared on the iPad so he could interact with the teacher and the kids. It was quite challenging, but it was really quite rewarding as well. To end his story, at least, he actually was going through some medical intervention, eventually developed at least enough of an immune system where he could come to school and had some level of success. But there are all kinds of reasons why we provide services to kids that, again, I'm not sure people always understand. And so, to be clear, we provide setting one through three services ourselves in Sartell St. Stephen Schools, but our setting fours are provided through a cooperative or a special ed co-op called Benton Stearns Educational Co-op, correct?
Correct.
Or Educational District.
Yep.
And Benton Stearns has a couple of different facilities here in the area. They have an elementary program here in our building just across the courtyard from us right now where we're recording in the central office building, and that's for some students who need to require a setting four. And then for our older kids, we're over at the Voyagers program. So the program here for the elementary kids is Pioneers, and then we have the Voyagers program over in Sauk Rapids.
That's correct. We also have a level four program for students who have ASD or autism, and that one is K-12.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So. And there's also like a residential program, isn't there?
Yes, we have a residential program that we offer educational support to. It's called Grafton.
Yep.
And it's located in Cold Spring, but it's part of our education district. So we are obligated to provide the educational component.
Yep. It's interesting to me. So there's some things that I never thought of until I became a principal and or a superintendent. And school districts are required to provide the educational component for lots of different kinds of kids. So if kids are in a residential program because the county places them there for mental health reasons or for any other reason, the school district is responsible to provide the educational component. Oftentimes, if that residential center is not within the boundaries of the school district, then the school district that is the resident school district of the facility provides the educational component and just bills us, right? So,
correct.
So you know, just because kids don't receive services in Sartell doesn't mean that we don't have a financial obligation to help provide that educational component. And that's not just for kids in special education. That would be for kids who are incarcerated as well.
Mm-hmm.
So if some student does something and ends up at a incarcerated in, facility, we are still responsible for the educational component. Mm-hmm. And if we do not provide it ourselves, let's say, for example, it's in Thief River Falls, then Thief River Falls schools would provide it and they bill us.
Mm-hmm. That's right? Correct.
Yep. And again, that to me, that I didn't quite realize all of that until, well, part of it I didn't realize until I was a principal, and other parts I didn't realize until I was a superintendent, which is fascinating. And again, I don't think most people think about that.
Yeah. Benton Stearns also provides our support for vision impaired students. So we utilize their vision impaired teacher, their deaf and hard of hearing teacher. Our psychologists who do a lot of our testing are also utilized through Benton Stearns.
Mm-hmm.
The audiologist also is employed by Benton Stearns, but we utilize their services in Sartell. I'm trying to think if I, or...
OTPT?
Yep, OTPT, which is occupational therapy and physical therapy. Also our assistive technology and our physical impaired teacher as well.
Yep.
We utilize all of their services when we have students who have those services and are needed. We need to provide them, so.
That gives us a good opportunity to talk a little bit about Benton Stearns special ed district, because the question might be, well, why do we belong to this organization? And the real simple answer is that it is both a service answer and an economic answer.
Mm-hmm.
So if we have a student who is hearing impaired, or maybe we have three, we are obligated under law to make sure that we provide the appropriate services with licensed personnel, but three kids don't necessarily make a full-time caseload for a licensed
mm-hmm.
teacher. So by collaborating with these six member districts through Benton Stearns. So let me reiterate that Benton Stearns has six member districts, including Kimball, Holdingford, Foley, Ricori, Sauk Rapids, and us, right? And so it's an economic benefit, but it's also a service benefit. So we can provide a high-quality staff at a price that it doesn't break the bank of individual districts. Like I said, three students does not make a whole caseload.
Mm-hmm.
And if we didn't belong to that collaborative, then we would be obligated under law to make sure that we got a full-time teacher or part-time teacher to address the needs of those kids. So it's a very good partnership. I believe that we've been in part of the Benton Stearns Education District for over 25 years,
mm-hmm.
right? And so... that's going to be important for our educational audience to know, or for our listening audience to know, because Benton Stearns is one of those things like that you might see the office down on Second Street, or you might hear the term and you go, what is that? Who are they? Well, it's an educational co-op for us to help provide special education services to really low incidence kids with low incidence disabilities, right? Well, obviously, we can go on and on about special ed. We will probably need to record an episode two, and so we will. So let's just recover. So we've talked about what special education is. We have 14 different areas that kids can qualify under. Some are real obvious to us, like visually impaired and blind, deaf and hard of hearing. There's deaf blind. There's learning disabilities. There's emotional behavior disabilities. There's autism spectrum disorder, there's speech, but there's also traumatic brain, and there's a whole, I didn't even talk about mental impairments, right? And so the range there. So we have all those. We're obligated by law to provide services at the least restrictive environment, which most often is interpreted in the local district, and also with the least amount of special education that a kid needs in order to be successful in the regular ed. We've talked about the different levels of services based on the number of minutes and also things like that. And then we also talked a little bit about Benton Stern. So hopefully our listening audience has gotten a good foundation as we head into episode two and provide some more in-depth background. So Don, thanks for being here today, and thank you to our audience. We'll be back next week with episode two of our discussion on special ed.
All right. Thank you for having me.
Thanks, Don.
Yeah.